Babylon Podcast was our last best hope for B5 fans. A self-contained show, 1 hour long, located on an RSS feed. A place for interviews and episode discussions for a whole bunch of humans and aliens. A shining beacon in cyberspace, all alone on the web. It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, the year the Lost Tales came upon us all. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2007. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Adamick.
I'm Tim Calendar.
Not again. What are you doing?
Sorry.
This is simple. This is so simple. We've done 80-something episodes, and now all of a sudden we can't get past the opening. Yeah. You guys are great.
There's a new guy at the helm.
Yes. Concentrate on the buttons. We'll be good. And who else do we have?
Tim's out there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm right here.
There you go. And hi, guys. It's Jeffrey, and I'm here in Hollywood once again after just posting bail and getting out for the last time because those people stole my autographs from the Kosh costume.
I was just saying, did somebody get into the storage?
What a deal. I'll tell you what. Plus, the waiting line to post bail. I got to tell you. It's really getting bad. They should have, like, speed scanners, you know, like, you know, flash your card and you're out.
Frequent flyer mile. No.
Yeah, exactly.
You realize now someone in the chat room is going to register Las Vegas KoshiCon.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, my goodness.
But you know what? I'm depressed.
Aw.
I'm sad.
Why?
I'm so sad. Well, you know, I look forward to doing our show week after week at the same time every week. And I'm noticing outside the studio here, I've got a nice window, and I'm noticing it gets darker and darker week by week. It's already starting. It's not even fall yet.
You know what that means? Improved opportunities to view satellites going overhead. I stepped outside last night just to get some fresh air about 8:30 and looked up. And like I said before, I live at the bottom of a tree-infested hill, so I'm looking at the small patch of sky that I can see, and sure enough, something was moving overhead.
Did you see me waving? I was waving at you.
That was you. I thought you looked familiar, but the sunglasses were kind of throwing me off.
Hey, you recognize the smell, I understand.
I recognize you by the foul stench when I was on board.
There you go.
Yes, all right. That's two universes over, but that's okay, too.
I got nothing.
I was going to give you a story. Are you ready for a story?
Sure.
My daughter is in sixth grade, just started. She is in math class. This is like the first, second day of school. And all of a sudden, apparently, this pencil comes rolling up the floor. Boy behind her, somehow, you know, it launched. I don't know whether on purpose or not, but he taps her on the shoulder and says, "Hey, could you get my pencil for me?" And my daughter reaches out a hand and goes, "I'll use the force and bring it to me." Well, this boy goes, "Oh, you like Star Wars?" And my daughter's like, "Yeah." Well, now he won't leave her alone.
Oh, geez.
Very nice. See how it all comes around?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I can say from experience the stereotypical staring that goes on when a girl walks into a comic book store. Happened to me in my first 3 years of college.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Chicka-chow.
It was one of those things where it was like head was like turning, like silence. Like, I'm a girl. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then if you said hi and struck up a conversation after you left, you go, "She talked to me. Oh, my God, she talked to me."
Okay. Now, listen, I also, I got something I just have to get off my chest. Let's do this right now. Tim, I saw the email that we got from Mike Smith.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't remember the last name right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mike Smith. I don't think I'm saying it right. But Mike, you know who you are and you know why you wrote to us, because he was complaining, Summer, about the
Two Vorlons.
The impromptu joke that I whipped together about the two Vorlons walking into the gay bar. So I wanted to make it up to Mike, and he took a little offense to the innuendo, and I thought I might rework the joke.
Okay.
On his behalf. Two Vorlons walk into a bar, have a couple of drinks. They have to go to the little Vorlon's room, one in one stall, one in the other, and then suddenly a shadow's foot came over and started tapping from underneath the wall between the stalls. That's it. That's all I got. Moving right along, we got the special guest this afternoon.
Now, 1,000 comedians looking for work, and you got to try to be funny.
I got nothing.
Where's Rebo and Zudi when you need them? Yeah, yes, our special guest, Jeffrey. Uh-huh. Tell us who that is tonight.
No. Surprise. I don't do that because the fans yell at me if I do tell you, and the fans yell at me if I don't tell you. So
we'll just alternate it.
We'll just go for it.
Okay, then. We will take a really quick break then and come back with our surprise interview.
In a world where we wait for a new Farscape series, one small crew sends out a beacon of hope to scapers everywhere.
Hi, this is Ben Browder.
Hi, I'm Claudia Black.
Hi, I'm David Franklin.
Hi, this is Rayleigh Hill.
Hi, this is Paul Goddard.
Hi, I'm Gigi Edgley, and you're listening to Escapecast.
Hi, everyone.
Attention.
Last time in our hero's journey.
La, la, la.
Frail you are, she says as she's knocking John out with her rifle.
I'm Wendy Hembrock with the news.
Yeah, baby, it's time once again.
My word.
L-M-N-O-P.
You know, I'm tired of these mother frelly stings of my mother frelling Leviathan.
Holy cannoli.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer will be dead.
Oh, no.
You can find the Scapecast at scapecast.org.
Every time I think that there's more to you than a pair of pushed-up loomers and a corset.
Luma.
If only we had some way to keep up our stamina.
Naughty mist.
Does Mummy know your hair?
Oh, no. Mummy doesn't know.
Here's your rematch, Crichton.
What a lovely fantasy of family reconciliation.
Where's your neck?
Shut up.
The Scapecast, your guide to the wonders of Farscape.
Babcom link established.
Keegan McIntosh, welcome to the Babylon Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Now, this is Tim and Summer, my co-hosts here. And Tim and Summer, I want you to know that Keegan is actually, you ready for this? This is very cool. Put this on our wall of shame. Keegan's actually a fan of Babylon Podcast. He's been listening to the last few episodes.
Get out. Really?
No way.
I have indeed. I have. I actually just listened to the one with Peter Woodward this morning.
Oh, okay.
Oh, see? Cool.
You're not like the people who just find the podcast and decide to start with episode number one.
not yet. I don't think I would have. I mean, you guys have done a lot of podcasts. So I don't think I'd have enough time to get through the whole list if I'd started at number one. yesterday and today.
Yeah, if at any time you do have that much time, really call your agent. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like, you know what? I'm not getting sent out for enough because I'm getting booked on podcasts.
So, Keegan, are you also a fan of Babylon 5 to begin with?
I am now. I wasn't. It wasn't that I was an anti-fan of Babylon 5 before I got cast in it. I just had never really taken the time to get to know it. When I was a kid, I guess I just sort of got really invested in Star Trek, and I stuck with it because it was safe. But I'm looking forward to going out and buying some of the DVD boxed sets to just go from the beginning right through to the end, because it's great stuff.
No, because it's interesting, because we a lot of fans who come to B5 were originally Trek fans who, you know, in some cases didn't want to find out about this upstart, and then somehow they get hooked, and they go, oh, wait a minute, what have I missed all this time? Now, the next question I would have for you then, Keegan, because especially your accent as Ventari is spot on, so what did you do to prepare for that role?
Well, as soon as I got the breakdown for it from my agent, I knew I wanted it. I was like, I need to get this role because I'm just such a huge science fiction fan in general. And on the breakdown description, it said that you could do the scene, which was a section from the first scene between me and Sheridan, and they said you could do it with either just your regular speaking voice or accent, or you could try it with a slight Russian accent. And that intrigued me because I love playing around with dialects. So I went online and I found a short clip on YouTube, so it's probably an illegal clip on YouTube, of Mollari doing a bit of a speech on the tenacity and nobility of humans during the Human Minbari War. And right. I don't know what episode it's from, but it's an older Mollari, so I think it's maybe him from the future or something. And
probably in the beginning, but go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, that may well be it. And I just tried to... I figured out how to mimic his accent for that little clip, and then try to apply it to the scene that I had, and it was a lot of fun. So yeah, that was the preparation as far as the accent, and then the rest of the preparation I did was going out to Halloween festivities the night before, which wasn't really. I work at a nightclub, or I did work at a nightclub at the time. So I'm pretty sure when I showed up the next day, I was probably disheveled, more than a little tired, and covered in glitter because I went as David Bowie as Ziggy Stardust. So I was covered in glitter, basically head to toe. And I don't know, maybe that little bit of stardust made them think, you know, this guy, he looks like he might actually be from space. So we should really cast him.
That's the oldest trick in the book, Keegan, put that dust on you. All the girls do that.
It worked for Jeffrey.
Oh, man, I'm telling you.
So as far as actually playing Ventari, what sort of direction did J. Michael Straczynski give you once you were cast in the role?
Well, what I found great about Joe was that his directions were sparse, but in a good way. So, like, instead of coming up to you after every single take and giving you some adjustment, whether or not any was really necessary, he has a really good idea of what he wants from the very get-go and kind of explains it to you before you even start filming. And so then if there's a slight adjustment, you know, usually just like, you know, the intention of a single word, you know, he'll come up to you between takes and you know, sort of say, this could be a little bit more punchy, or this could be perhaps a bit more sarcastic or something like that. But yeah, it was, his direction was generally very apt, or always. As soon as he'd come up to me and give me an alteration, I'd say, oh, that's so much better than what I was doing. And I'd just go out and do my best to replicate it. But it was a pleasure to work with.
How easily did you fit in with, like, the rest of the cast and crew? Had you seen any episodes? Did you, like, look forward to meeting them and working with them?
Yeah, well, I tried to grab a couple of episodes from the section of the series where my father was involved, so Emperor Cartagia. And what season was that, third or fourth?
Fourth
season.
Yeah.
And so I got a chance to see, I think more than anything else, actually, I was watching Lando Mollari and Jakar, and they weren't in the sections that I was in, but the bits that I saw of Bruce Boxleitner and Tracy Scoggins, I don't know, I was just really looking forward to working with people that had spent so much time in this world. And because obviously, I mean, no matter how much research I could have done going into it, they were inevitably always going to know more than I did about the universe. So I could just ask them questions. And it was really easy to fit in with them once I showed up. You know, I told them all that it was the first time I'd set foot on a soundstage in like 8 years. And they said, you know, I think the way they worded it, they said there was no mercy on set. And they were very friendly about that. And I didn't really quite know how to take it when they said, you know, no mercy, no mercy at all. And the way they exemplified that was by telling me after the first take that they'd been filming the rehearsal. So I'm sort of walking down, you know, along this green screen area, and I think we're just blocking it out so we know, you know, where I've got to end up, where the camera's going to be. And then afterwards, they're like, cut, print. And I'm like, but I wasn't acting. And they're like, well, you were just walking. No mercy, man.
That's awesome.
So I learned my lesson. But it was good. It was efficient. I mean, I didn't need to act while I was walking. Could...
Had you done green screen stuff before?
Never before.
Yeah? So a new experience. Yeah. What do you think?
It was fun. I mean, I guess I'm used to to a certain extent, imagining my surroundings, because I do a lot of stage acting, or at least I have in the last 4 or 5 years. So, I mean, regardless of what kind of stage you're on, at least one entire wall is just audience, so you kind of have to imagine what would be there. And so I didn't find green screen particularly difficult to play off of. From what I understand, the special effects people, they go in afterwards, and if they find that, you know, your eyes are looking at a specific location over and over again, they might put an object there so it makes sense that you're looking at something. But by and large, I didn't really notice it when I watched the in fact, I was really surprised when I saw Bruce and I walking through the docking bay. And all of a sudden, I kind of realized halfway through the scene, I was like, oh, I wasn't there, actually. The spaceship doesn't exist. I was in a green screen. So it fooled me, and I was in it.
Now, you say you were a science fiction fan. So even not having been specifically a B-5 fan, how cool was it to get into the Star Fury cockpit?
Oh, I mean, it was a very small portion of the Star Fury that I got to sit in. But it was a lot of fun, and there was a more technical side to it than I had ever really imagined when I was watching science fiction. Like, just figuring out how to move your body. They'd say, okay, well, the Star Fury is moving this way. It's like, well, I've never been in a Star Fury before. How would that cause my body to move? And, you know, you try and liken it to a car, but you know it's not the same thing at all. There's just no way. And, you know, I tried to, you know, give myself a little shove over so it looked like I was turning, but not too much, because they've got to have some kind of, you know, gravitational stabilizer, some doodad in there that doesn't have you bouncing around like a little ball. But the better part than being in the Star Fury contraption while we were shooting it was watching it once the show was finally released and being like, yeah, I'm in a spaceship. That's so cool. And my friends too. That's, you know, I fast forwarded to that section. I'd be like, guys, I'm in a spaceship.
Forget all this intense drama. Let's get cut to the chase.
Yeah. Well, I usually show them the whole thing, but some of them don't have the stamina because they're neither science fiction fans nor do they know anything about Babylon 5, and they'll just say, I just want to see you in a spaceship. And I'm like, okay, all right.
That's the sign of success, mm-hmm. in sci-fi. If you get yourself in a spaceship, you're pretty much there.
There you go. It sounds like
welcome to the club.
Sounds like you need to brush up on your persuasive skills.
To get them to watch the whole thing.
Yeah, to get them to watch Babylon 5. Start with season 2. For those that have like a short attention span, start with season 2.
Yeah.
And then go back to season 1 after they get hooked. We've found that's the best way to draw in new people. We start talking about season 2 and everything that happens, and they go, oh, okay, how did we get here? And they go, oh, you need to see this episode from season 1.
Yeah, that's generally how I get people hooked on other series that I've been hardcore addicted to. You never start them on the first episode. The first episode always has to establish far too much to be able to. I'm surprised people, you know, having seen the first episode of any major series, that they actually stick with it, because usually it's too much exposition.
So, what are your favorite sci-fi series right
now? I don't know if I'm almost embarrassed, but I know I shouldn't be.
No.
Lately, I've been absolutely hooked on Heroes. I watched the whole thing from start to finish, and then within a week, I'd gone back to the first episode again, wanting to start all over again and pick up the little pieces that I missed before. And I'm just so glad that, despite the fact that it's not really science fiction, it's more comic book superhero, I'm just glad that the general genre is still pumping out really high-quality stuff, because I become enraptured by it so easily. And otherwise, Buffy. I mean, I've always been a big Buffy fan. And that's another one of those series where you definitely don't start them at the beginning. You don't start them while they're still in grade 10 or 11 or whatever. You wait until third season, and that's when they all get really hot, and that's when the overarching storyline starts really. <Yeah. So. laughs>
By hot, you mean legal?
Yeah.
Well, I guess, yeah. Well, I mean, given the fact that they were all in their mid to late 20s when they started playing high school students anyways, I'm sure. But, yeah, you know, you want to start people off when Sarah Michelle Gellar and Allison Hannigan and when all of them are at their most attractive. So
so how did you first come to the role of Ventari to begin with? You mentioned that your agent had brought it to you. So what? Give us a sort of a breakdown of how you were first approached.
It's not as glamorous a story as it might seem from the outside. I literally just got a phone call from my agent saying that, you know, I've got an audition for you in 2 days, and it's for Babylon 5. And instantly, my ears sort of pricked up. And she sent me the breakdown. And yeah, like I said before, I knew instantly. I was like, you know, if I'm going to come back into the film industry, I want this to be where I start. I want to start with science fiction, and then we'll hopefully, you know, keep going that way. So it wasn't, I didn't go out searching for it. It just kind of came to me. And for that, I'm very, very grateful. And it seems like a lot of the best roles that one gets, they happen when you've almost stopped looking. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
Now, the other day, when you and I spoke on the phone, without solicitation, you went off on a rant about Warner Brothers making more and how enthusiastic you were about making more direct-to-video projects like this. And then it came to me that you said you listened to the show that we posted today, the one with Peter Woodward, which I believe that episode started with Tim going off on a whole rant about, you know, what is it going to take to get some more. So,
several of your guys' shows that I've seen or that I've listened to, it seems that it's an ongoing topic of discussion.
And so what are your thoughts on it? Go ahead and give me some idea of, now that you've been a part of the process and you've seen how it unfolded, what would be Keegan's opinions about the plausibility of making more?
I'm going to go ahead and say that there will be more, because I'm an eternal optimist, and you know, JMS has said that JMS Joe has said that, you know, Warner Brothers is very happy with the fact that the Lost Tales, this first installation, has sold far beyond their expectations, and that's got to give us hope. I mean, hope. I can't imagine that they wouldn't look at that and recognize that there's still a huge Babylon 5 fan base that wants to see more of these stories, and that, you know, that the actors that were responsible for its initial greatness are still willing to make them, as is, you know, Joe Michael Straczynski. And then there's new pups on the set like me, and I'm just really happy that, you know, Joe hasn't, you know, he didn't just write one-off episode for my character. He's in his head gone out and you know, infiltrated my character into the whole universe of things, and he's got a plan. It's clear. He won't tell me what it is, but you know, I asked him. I said, "So does Vintari actually end up coming back in 30 years and blowing up the world?" And he said, "Well, you know, all I'll tell you is this: the prophecy comes true, but not in the way that you'd think." So. There's my enigma. I just want to figure out what happens to Prince Vintari. Like, does he turn evil? Is there some kind of, like, Drac Keeper in store for him? Or what happens when he goes back to Minbar with Delenn and their son David, who, if I remember correctly from my research, has a keeper in a jar somewhere waiting for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, there's any number of ways that my character could actually become evil eventually in the end, or just, you know, misguided.
Or not. See, that's one of the things about Babylon 5 in particular and Joe's writing, and this isn't really a spoiler for you, is that he lays out the pieces and shows you what happens, but the fun of it is how you get there. And that's where, you know, once it's all revealed, that's when your jaw drops to the floor and you go, "Oh, my God." So you're in for a great treat, Keegan, to go watch.
I hope so.
No, there's no hope. You're going to really enjoy it.
But I don't think any of us would argue that there's plenty of opportunity for plotline to continue. I don't think anybody has a doubt for a moment that Joe can make content to go to DVD. Do you have any experience or firsthand knowledge or anything that you can – we're just hungry to get a sense of where Warner Brothers' head is at. As I am on the subject.
Unfortunately, the wrong person to ask. Maybe Peter Woodward with his techno magic ways has some way of gleaning what's going on in Warner Brothers.
But if you had an opinion, I'm sure you want to see a whole lot more come out as long as you're in the leading role of
each
one. Oh,
yeah. I mean, whether I'm in them or not, I mean, that does, you know, it may not be the next installation that I appear in, or maybe, you know, it'll get shelved, you know, after 20 episodes and I still haven't made it back in. But I really absolutely think that more should be made. You know, the because Joe has gone ahead and he's created the history of this universe, you know, 1,000 years into the past and 1,000 years into the future. And the even with all the seasons of Babylon 5 and all of the movies and now, you know, the Little Lost Tales, it's just only scratched the surface of what that universe has to offer in terms of quality story and intrigue. And, you know, with that much, with that wealth of plot to draw from, we would just be foolish to not put pressure on Warner Brothers to make more of them.
You know, that's like leaving, what I was after.
it would be like leaving all of those, you know, ancient Greek tragedies and comedies that are buried in age old garbage dumps in Egypt and just like leaving them there, not even looking for them. You know, there's more to be had, and we should go out and seek to get more.
You also mentioned the a night where all of you went out to dinner.
Oh, we had a lovely dinner, probably the best I've ever had in my life. It was a great restaurant called Cipino's, if I remember correctly, in Yale Town in Vancouver. And I got all dressed up to the nines because I'd never been to this, and it probably wasn't even that upscale, but I generally do not have that expensive taste in food. So I got really dressed up and I showed up, and Joe and Doug Netter and Tracy and Bruce and the whole group were there. Sam Barnes was there, and we had a lovely dinner. It was the first time I'd ever had lobster, and Peter was late. Peter Woodward was a bit late, and we were kind of, you know, sitting around going like, I wonder if he's even going to come. And there was talk, so there was a bet going on that some people figured he'd show up, other people figured, you know, he must have had some other engagement going on, either, you know, somewhere in the past or the future or in a different dimension. And delivering, it was probably more important and menacing than anything he could, you know, engage with us at the dinner table. So, but it was a lovely dinner, and it was a great opportunity for me to get to know the cunning wit of Doug Netter. He's so funny, and I don't think I can remember specific jokes, but mostly the relationship that Joe, the special relationship that Joe and Doug share, having worked with each other for so long. And, you know, all of Joe's talks about bad touching hearings and trying to get him evicted from the sound studio. But, you know, who is that old man? Get that old man off my sound. But, you know, Doug will deliver his comebacks, you know, only loud enough that the few people right next to him can actually hear. And that's probably the best part of his sense of humor, is that, like, you know, he doesn't try and take over a room with his, you know, long monologues. He just gives, you know, a little dry jab to somebody within about a 3-foot radius. So.
Very nice. That's
awesome.
That was brilliant. Spot on. That was excellent. Thank you.
I'm glad. Yeah. I would love to get to know him, both of them, better. They're wonderful, wonderful men.
Well, if you ever get the chance to be brought back home to the Babylon 5 universe, I think you should ask Joe for a sock puppet of your own.
Oh, yeah.
Sock puppet? I should. Yeah, and I don't know how we designed the hair for it. The hair was, because that was tricky. There were extensions involved. I'll get some little yellow pieces of yarn and sew them into a cockatoo shape.
Now, we've always teased Peter Woodward about, you know, the 2.5 minutes he spent in the makeup chair. How long were you in the makeup chair?
Well, my makeup wasn't particularly intense, but the hair was definitely a, I lost track of time because I was really enjoying it. I'm sure that if I'd had to do it every day, I would have started to become aware of how long I was actually sitting there for. My call was more on par with the crew call than the other cast members. I did have to be there a couple of hours early, because instead of having like one big piece, as I, you know, as I imagine that Peter Jurassic's headpiece was just one big. Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe he had 18 as well, but I had like 6 or 7 different little hair pieces all sticking in different directions to try and create that bizarre. You know, there was a duck bum and then some frills up at the top, and But I had a great time. I was really enjoying it. I got along very well with the makeup and hair department, and we had a great old time laughing away at my bizarre hairstyle. I loved it. I just couldn't move. I couldn't like sit back too far or lean into a wall or even just stand up against things, because then I would flatten the back of my hair. And there was all, especially because now they're shooting on digital and you know, there's the option to upgrade to HD, you know, any little hair out of place will show up. So they have to be very careful to make sure that the hair is in exactly the same formation from scene to scene. Otherwise, continuity goes crazy.
Have you been approached by the sci-fi cons yet? Are you going to go on tour and do the autograph thing?
I haven't been approached yet, but I'm very interested in attending. I think it would be a lot of fun.
See? We're putting the word out for you there.
Yes.
Hey, I would love to. This is a shameless plug for myself. I'd love to go on the Comic-Con.
There's 10% of it goes to Farpoint Media, but the rest, funnel your way, checks in the mail.
Yeah, no, there's the. I should also inform you that there are, we have a chat room that listens to us actually recording this live, and you have a lot of fans in that room.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, I should have. I noticed that too. I should have logged in, but then I would have been distracted by it.
You can jump in. You can jump in later. But two of them asked me, "When are you getting a website?"
You know, I've been, especially in the last week or so, I've been really seriously considering figuring out how to code it myself. I don't think I'd be comfortable handing it over to somebody else. I want to learn how to do all the coding myself. And but the theater company that I'm starting up in Vancouver has, you know, started developing its own website, and I was like, well, geez, I got to catch up, because if they, you know, have links out to all of the members, and I just, you know, I'm an unhyperlinked name, what would I look like? You know, what kind of geek am I? So I'm going to have to learn RSS and XML and all those, you know,
all that fun stuff. Touch.
Back in grade 8, I could probably design a pretty good website, but not now.
Well, you should know that there are probably a good 3 or 4 people who are waiting to jump on it and poke all around it once you're done. So,
okay. Well, I'll get on it. It'll keep my days busy. Well, I mean, not that they're not busy at all, but
I was going to say, do you have any other projects lined up that we might be able to see you in?
Not just yet. I actually, you know what? Cross. Let's all cross our fingers, because I had an audition today for something, and it seems to go very well. But who knows what'll come of that? And actually, I went out for Justice League America. Believe it or not.
Ooh.
Really?
Yeah, 2 weeks, a week and a half, or 2 weeks ago. But they're still at a very preliminary stage of casting. I mean, there was no stipulation on body type or sex or ethnicity or anything. They were just, you know, wanting to see anybody and everybody give the best that they had in an audition, and it was. I'm hopeful, but you know, I'm still pretty wet around the ears. So,
so who did you read for?
There was not specific. They would give you 5 different scenes of varying styles, and despite the fact that they were all labeled protagonist, antagonist, I chose the monologue where the protagonist seemed the most evil. So he's a protagonist in his own mind, at the very least. And and then they wanted us to relate the funniest thing that ever happened to us and the saddest thing that ever happened to us. And I have difficulty with comedy, so I find it much more difficult to tell the funny story. Because I don't lead a very funny life. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Well, then you're welcome back here anytime.
That's great. Well, I would like to really, really thank you for joining us today and talking about Babylon 5 and your geekness, your level of geekness.
Yeah, exactly. You,
thank
you
so much
right
for
in.
Having me. I'm thrilled to be on your podcast.
No problem.
Well, thanks for a wonderful job too.
And you definitely have to send us emails when you get some more sci-fi related gigs,
or just a website,
and a website.
I will
welcome
email,
to the 90s.
I will email you guys when my website is finished, and then we can send my few fans in the chat room to over to my little website.
Excellent. That's great.
Well, I'll let you know before we go that I am a big fan. I thought your portrayal of Ventari was really moving. I think you really capture the character in, you know, such a short piece you got a very great sense of where he was and where he had been, and you held your own quite admirably with the likes of Bruce Boxleitner. So here's hoping we get to see more.
Well, thank you so much. It means a lot to hear that. I had a wonderful time, and then here's hoping I get to be involved with all those wonderful, wonderful actors once again.
Excellent.
Oh. I'm going to cry. Aww. Let's have a group.
No. This is what I say. My life, it's not very funny. I bring drama and tragedy wherever I go.
That's not true. That is not true.
Well, thank you, Keegan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Take it easy.
Have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This is Captain Yarsto, EAS Netherlands.
Area Planum Command Post reporting.
This is NBS-1, Squad Leader Tijan.
We are not hostile. I repeat, we are not hostile.
The Corps is mother, the Corps is father.
I will need to protect the interests of our people.
That is, we fought here at Orion 7 in the name of freedom.
Three-Edged Sword, Episode 13, Examinations and Recalibrations.
Welcome back, Squadron Leader. I understand your fighter survived the battle, more or less undamaged?
Indeed. Thank you, Captain. The armor has been weakened here and there, but that's to be expected.
All things considered, your squadron took less damage than I had expected. Then again, some of the enemy fighters got away lighter than I would have expected too. I suppose it's always hard to predict combat in hyperspace.
Is that so? That may have been a miscalculation on our part. As you know, our weapons are more powerful than the previous Frazi class. With more preparation, they might have been calibrated more precisely, but the situation of yours forced our hand. My second-in-command, Cotrine, will bring the matter up with one of your tactical officers.
I'm sure Commander Jacobs will see to it. Though I have to say, if your fighters are still in that condition, I'm rather surprised you were carrying around sensitive materials in need of stasis. We're happy to provide you with better facilities, of course. But it wasn't among the requests I'd expected you might make of me.
Another unusual situation. We had hoped to take the stasis capsule to our base, but the circumstances would not allow it. In our position, we often find ourselves doing the unexpected in the interests of Narn liberation, such as our alliance. Unexpected, but welcome nonetheless.
The alliance is important for us as well, no matter what the numbers of ships out there may look like. It'll be even more valuable if you can get some of your other fighters online, of course. But any ship counts right now. And ships that the enemy isn't as familiar with as our own are doubly valuable. It may just be that your calibration troubles in the last battle will give the next people who tangle with your fighters a rather nasty surprise.
Surprise is always an advantage in battle, and one I prefer to employ, such as the unexpected arrival of your reinforcements. I'm somewhat surprised you didn't mention the possibility of that during our earlier discussions.
I consider telling you, Squadron Leader, but...
Please, Captain. Commander, or simply Tijan if you prefer.
Very well, Commander. As I was saying, I consider telling you, but I wanted to focus on the more likely scenario. Your forces were more crucial if the others couldn't respond in time, so our time was better spent focusing on that option. To be honest, aside from sending them their orders, I myself barely thought about the other ships during our approach. It's always a mistake to count on anyone else coming to your rescue. Even if they come 9 times out of 10, that 10th time is the one you have to be prepared for.
Then you can see the non-perspective quite clearly, Captain. The first time we drove the Centauri from our world, we were alone. The situation is hardly any better now. Which is precisely why I have done what I have done, Captain.
Yes, at the end of the day, we all have to do the important things ourselves, like ensuring that our weapons are properly calibrated.
Captain.
I mean no disrespect, Commander, and I can only guess at your circumstances prior to our arrival. But your fighters had already been damaged. We already knew your long-range sensors were offline, and now I understand that your weapons were improperly calibrated as well. I have all the sympathy in the universe for the plight of your people.
Sympathy.
But, as your ally, I need to know we can depend on you when the time comes. We're going to need something to work with to get the rest of the fleet and the civilian authorities to go along.
You have no... Of course. Forgive me, Captain. It is a reasonable expectation. For what it's worth, we were returning from an unexpected engagement with the Centauri Patrol. We lost 3 fighters. More importantly, 3 good Narn. There has been little time for mourning the dead since the occupation.
I understand. And the way you talk about the Centauri, I can only assume that you've had plenty of experience dealing with them.
Experience? Oh yes, Captain. I have had experience.
I can't imagine why Tijan would order me over here while I'm still trying to complete the maintenance on our ships.
Welcome, Cotrine. It is nice to finally meet you in person.
Where exactly is Tijan?
He's coordinating with Captain Yarstow. They decided to give you some help with your repairs. We don't know what to expect next, but we need all available ships at peak efficiency, and your ships certainly need some work.
Our ships are more than adequate for any task required of them. It's not like we can requisition new parts from Homeworld anymore. We have to fabricate parts the best we can using your facilities.
Well, then I should make your day. We located some spare parts for you.
Koshan, I thought the storage centers were under Centauri control.
It's not a storage center exactly. We located what appears to be a battle site during some of our reconnaissance sweeps. There are multiple Centauri and Narn wreckages present. There's some odd energy discharges in the area, and scanning didn't reveal too much. But some of the ship profiles are definitely Frazi class.
Why didn't Tijan inform me about this himself?
Well, we only recently discovered this information. The repair and fortification schedules are keeping everyone very busy. At the moment, I'm the only spare pilot available. Tijan said you would be capable of handling this yourself, and he thought it best for me to brief you on the mission.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Well, we have about 6 hours before our transport's ready, so let's review our plans to get those parts.
This is an ISN radio news brief. I'm Philip Highcastle reporting. This dome is our home. That was the chant that echoed throughout the main public dome of the Utopia Planitia colony on Mars yesterday. Residents staged a peaceful demonstration to protest the desperate and increasingly violent attacks carried out by Free Mars terrorists. The demonstrators marched down Bradbury Avenue to the public circle, where they sang songs of solidarity, and local Night Watch officials gave speeches in support of Provisional Earth Force Military Governor Colonel George O'Brien. Piracy rumors are affecting vacation plans throughout Earth Alliance space. Travel agencies report a drop in interstellar tourism due to concerns of potential raider activity in the Orion sector. While Orion 7 itself is not a vacation hotspot, its jump gate is a transfer point for 4 major destinations, including the popular Rivendell spas of Epsilon Eridani. EarthGov officials have declined to comment on the rumors, citing a lack of credible reports from the region. If you're hoping to celebrate New Year's Eve in the Centauri style, better buy that Bravari now. Retailers tell ISN that as a result of the EA Centauri Non-Aggression Pact, the rare liqueur has been jumping off the shelves. Prices are hovering in the 300 credit per bottle range and are only expected to climb higher in the coming months. With news on the hour, this has been an ISN radio news brief.
Personal log, Sirius Planum Command Post. It's been getting a little testy on base. There's rumors about a board of inquiry being convened to investigate the Netherlands operation, and questions are being asked about how the Narn were brought on board in the first place. Vester pushing the attack as the Clark collaborators, looking for a chance to take him down a peg. They still believe rule from within serves our best interests, and Vester's influence has always been their biggest roadblock. I know he convinced me of their folly long ago. So, the fishing expedition is about to begin. Not that they'll find much. I rebuilt most of this comm system myself when the Psychops expanded the surveillance net. The encryption on this log is enough to give a Vorlon a headache, and the nested relays run so deep, I can send a message to Proxima while making it look like I'm ordering bad spoo sent to the Narn Embassy. Not that I'll pull that prank again any time soon. Korra's mother, the Korra's father. Close personal log.
Three-Edged Sword is brought to you by Voices of Babylon.
Welcome back to the Babylon Podcast. I'm Christina Carr.
And I'm ye old Babcast editor, Brad Boyer.
Apparently, Summer, Tim, and Jeffrey had so much fun with the latest interviews and deep geeking that they ran way over their normal recording time.
So, rather than leave you without a show when the crew goes off to the PME, I've taken a cue from Christina and I's show, Pod Culture, and split the show into two parts.
So tune in again next week for the second half where the crew gets into some serious deep geeking on the second story in Babylon 5, The Lost Tales, over there, and enjoy another installment of Three-Edged Sword.
And remember, if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can email the crew at babylonpodcast@gmail.com.
Or call the voicemail line at 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the crew geeked too long.